We're on lecture 11. Now we're on the discussion. And the lecture is, creatively, I take charge of the people and the world I create. Each is a reflection of my dreams and my goals for myself. The world is far more vast than humans imagine. People have unbelievable gifts. And one of the gifts, of course, is the gift of charisma. Do you have any questions or any comments that you'd like to make about what we were speaking of? It was sort of a definite, one-pointed point of view that I was giving you there, and oftentimes that doesn't lend itself to much discussion, but perhaps you have something that you'd like to ask about or think about or share, and now would be the time to do it. Any comment? Okay. If you have no comment, we'll move forward and continue with that subject a little bit. Now, how do you develop creativity within yourself? Okay, Mr. Okay. You have a comment? Yep. And one for you. We have a couple comments here. Let's see what they are. Okay, with a smiley face. Why is it that no matter how good I am to people, some do not appreciate?
Reciprocate.
Get the emphasis in the right syllable. Okay. Okay. You are walking down a fool's paradise. You like it when I say that, of course. Okay. Why are you doing nice things for people? Why are you being a nice man? What do you say here? You say, you do things for people and they don't reciprocate. They don't do something back for you. Why is it that no matter how good I am to people, some do not reciprocate? Well, apparently you're not doing good for people. Because if you were doing good for people, they would reciprocate. They would come back and they would give you their house, their car, their wife, or their world, or what have you. And you would have that. Now, I'm being funny, and I know I'm not being very funny by being funny the way I'm being funny, so you don't appreciate it, nobody does, and I understand that. We are ourselves because we are ourselves and not because of what other people do for us. Now, I come here to Nigeria and I spend a couple of weeks with you several times a year or several, over the years. And as I come here, you all have lots of money. You all have lots of successful things. You have businesses, you have homes, you beautiful clothing and stuff like that. But none of you come up to me and say, Herb, you have given a wonderful lecture. You have done something to me. You have lifted my heart. You have shown me a better way of looking at life. Now, here's... Okay. Oh, I mean, okay, look at me. Okay, okay, yeah, okay. Herb, okay, is speaking. Herb, okay, says, I would like to reciprocate and give you something for what you are giving me. And I say, that's not necessary. I'm giving because I love you, and I love you regardless of whether you ever give anything back or not. You cannot help give things back by being what I'm sharing. So, okay, says, but Herb, I want you to have this. I have put aside $1 million, and I want you to have that. And I want you to have that every year when you come down here so that you have pin money to do things you want to do with. And I say, okay, that's very generous of you, and I accept. So, okay, gives me this money. Isn't that a nice idea? Great idea, huh? So he gives me this money, and he says, Herb, you are wonderful. I want to reciprocate for all the good that you give me. And I have received good from you over the years, immeasurable. You have stood beside me as I was doing my lessons and as I was understanding this philosophy and coming up with lots of great things. And I kept running away and going off into new ventures and new projects, and then I didn't have time for you, and yet I still love you and I still care about you. But I had to go my own way. No, you didn't think I was terrible for doing that. You loved me regardless of what I did. You loved me even though I was the prodigal son. And I went off and did my other things. And that's okay. And then you give me so much, and I really have never given you anything except my unconditional love. Because I do unconditionally love you, Herb. That's what you say. And so now I'd like to give you $1 million every year for you to have as operating money for your activities down here, or whatever you want to use it for. And I want to give it to you because I'm making it. I'm making it because I'm putting the principles you're sharing and teaching into practice, and therefore I'm making a lot of money. And then up speaks Peter. And Peter says, Herb, I love you. And I said, Pete, you're wonderful. Herb, I want to reciprocate for all of the good that you have given me, all of the unconditional love you've given me, all the caring that you've given me. And when I was careless about you, I was weary about you, leery about you. I wasn't sure what kind of a character you were. I wasn't sure what kind of a philosophy you were. I wasn't sure whether you really lived it or not, or whether it was really something sincere from your heart. But as I've seen you over the years, I know it's sincere, and you teach what I want to learn. And so I say, super, Peter. Well, Herb, I want to give you something in reciprocation for what you have given to me. And I said, Peter, you being a fantastic student is reciprocation enough for me. Because if I come down here because I'm looking for money, I'm sort of barking in the wrong desert area. I should be up in the Arabia era. But the thing is, I'm barking in the wrong area because you feel that you are poor people here and that you cannot afford to pay for your organization. You cannot afford to keep up your organization. You cannot afford to give an offering every time you come. And every time you come, you want something for free. And I don't know what else I can do. That's just the way our life is. That's just the way our way of doing things is. And I say, Peter, don't depreciate yourself in front of me, because I won't accept it. Because I create you as a wealthy, healthy, fantastic, glorious man in my eyes, in my world. You don't owe me anything, and you do owe somebody that you're not paying off, and that's too bad. You owe yourself your respect. You owe yourself to believe that you are a wonderful person. Just like, okay, he owes it to himself to believe he's a wonderful person. His $1 million won't begin to cover his reciprocation to me for what I unstintingly give of my heart. I get so excited that I lose my voice. I get so excited that my throat gets dry and stuff like that. And it's not because I'm lying to you. You know that for sure. But it's because I'm so excited about the possibility of these things if you were to utilize them in your personal life and in your professional life and in your political life, because it's all bound up. And so I say to you, Pete, you don't owe me a thing, but you owe a lot to yourself and your family and your world. Now, so along comes all the rest of you, and you all say, Herb, I want to reciprocate to you for what you have done to me. And I say, you can't. You can't reciprocate to me, because wisdom comes with no price. You cannot pay for wisdom. You cannot pay for genius. You cannot pay for charisma. This is something that is in you or not. And if it's in you and you use it, then you are the blessed one. If it's in you and you don't use it, then you're the fool. And it seems like some of you are the fool. Because I want this, and I want that, and I want this, and I want that, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. You shout, you shout, you shout, you shout, you shout. I want a big car, I want a big house, I want a big this, I want a big... And you haven't even done the little thing. And the little thing is this. Anyone want to tell me? What's the little thing that you should be doing? I like me. That's just a little thing. I like me, I like me, I like me. When you start saying, I like me, what happens to your life? Every door opens up for you. When you say, I like me, every channel of good pours out the blessings of heaven, which are yours. But if you don't like yourself, the blessings can be poured out to you, and they'll just run over to you and go down the sewer, and you won't take advantage of it and benefit from it. The reciprocation is what comes to you, not to me. The reciprocation comes not from what you have given, but because of what you are. And you are wonderful, all of you. All of you are chosen by your own self. You're chosen by God. Where's God? Right in here. You're chosen by God to be the blessing that you are to your world, to your family, to your community, to your government, to your country, to your world, you know, the globe on which we live. Yeah. And you're wonderful. But you're not going to accomplish anything if you feel you owe something, or if you feel somebody else owes you. And if you ever give with the expectation that someone must appreciate it or reciprocate, give back, or that someone must understand that you are the great Lord blessing their life. If you do that, you're in trouble. Now, you all do it. You all do it. Mary says to her children, I want you to behave. Now, I'm your mother, now behave. And she thinks that that's going to make him behave. And Mary has learned from our talks together that what she says to her children is, children, each one of you is God. Each one of you is beautiful. Each one of you is good. Each one of you always does what is right. And each one of you always does what is fun. To be yourself and have fun. Each one of you always does that. And then she lets it alone, lets it sink in. And then she says it another time, without feeling that she's got to tell him something or teach him something, but she's planting the seed. And then, little by little, the flowers grow. Little by little, the plants come up. And the plants come up, and what do they say? They say, you know, we got the greatest mom in the world. She never tells us to do anything. She tells us to be ourselves and have fun. And then she tells us that we're God. How can we not be good if we're God? How can we not be wonderful if we're God? But she doesn't say that. She just lets us judge for ourselves. And you know, at school, we are considered the best kids in the class. We are the brightest children in the class. We are the happiest children in the class. And in the neighborhood, we are considered to be the happiest family in the neighborhood. And in any relationship, we are the happiest married couple in the world. the ideal man and the ideal woman, because we made it that way, because we are God and we created this happiness, this harmony, this peace, this goodness, because that's our nature. Now, we don't need anything from our husband or wife or children or whomever. They do not have to reciprocate because we feed them. There was a movie the other day, and in the movie, this black boy was marrying this white girl, and naturally the white girl was very wealthy, and the black boy's parents were comfortable. They were retired, and they were comfortable. And so the black boy's father says to him, "Son, I put you through college. I worked night and day to earn money to put you through college. I did this for you and I did that for you, and now you're going to marry someone who is totally out of our thing." And the girl that he was marrying was a super girl, naturally, and her parents owned a major string of newspapers. You know, they weren't poor people. They were very fantastic people, but they too were bigoted. And this is what the boy said, which I think is so significant. His father said, "Son, I gave you everything. Now you owe it to me to go and be a normal marriage. You're not going to go and marry a white girl because it won't work. You'll have children that'll be multi-colored and stuff, and this and that. And no, you cannot do that." And the boy said to his father, "Dad, while I appreciate everything you did for me, you did it for me because I'm your child, not because I owe you something. You put me through school because that's your job. You chose to be a parent, and as a parent, you choose to put your children through college or whatever is the best that you can afford for them, and you give it to them, and you don't say, 'I'm doing this now, you owe me to follow my skills of life, my attitude, for the rest of your life.'" And he said, "Dad, I love you. I really do. I love you and Mom, and you're wonderful people, but I've got to walk my own path." Well, now, this boy, forget the name of the guy, actor, but this boy, in the scene, he is a medical doctor, and he is going around, and has been going around for years, to the various underprivileged countries, being a medical doctor in these countries. He has written 3 textbooks on medical problems, you know, very competent and very well thought of, and on, he's done maybe a dozen or things so notable that surely a man of 32 years old, whatever he was, could not have even begun to do that unless he were very special. And he was very special. Needless to say, they did get married, but the thing is, they lived their life not expecting the problems of multi-class marriage. They lived their life not expecting problems, not expecting things were going to be bad. We'll face them as they come. We'll face them as they come. And when they come, we will stand there and say, "We are doing everything right. And just because we're black and white and not black and not all white, doesn't make any difference. We are doing what we believe." And they were delightfully, deliciously happy. Sidney Poitier played the young man. Very beautifully done. It made you proud of a young person who stood up to his father and said, "I'm doing my thing. I'm not against you. I love you. I appreciate what you've done for me, but I got to do what I got to do." Now, the father felt the son owed him reciprocation for what he had done for him, and he didn't. He didn't. We never do. If our children live a happy, harmonious, fulfilled life in any way, we are satisfied. We are delighted. If some people would say, if our children stay out of jail, we're happy. But that's not the case. We're happy for whatever. Maybe they go to jail because they're what's his name? Your African man?
Mandela.
Maybe he's a Mandela. Now, would you say Mandela did a bad thing?
No.
Not at all.
No.
And would you say that he should be chastised because he went to prison?
No.
No. No, he stood up for principle. He could have gotten out of that rap easy. He could have walked away from that easy. But he stood up for it because that was his whole life. His whole life was standing up for who he was, what he believed in, and he's a magic man. You are magic people, but you all feel a certain amount of necessity for reciprocation from the world around you. And until you let that go, you're going to live a very unhappy life, not because you don't deserve it, but because you ain't going to get it. It just doesn't work that way. Reciprocation doesn't come back that way. You know, Mr. O.K., listen to me nicely without biting my tongue off before I say it. You do so many good things in this world, and so many people have had their life changed because you did something for them without asking for back payment right away or ever, and not expecting it from it, making them feel obligated to you. None of them did. But you did these things for these people, and you will never know who became president. You'll never know who became the parent, who became the judge, who became the one who guided others because you were a guide to them at their time of need, of their time of awareness. We never know. We never know the lives we touch. We never know how strangely the lives are that we touch. I have happily run across one or two instances where the things I have said to people were utterly amazing, and I didn't know it. I really didn't know it. I just said it because my heart was talking, and you know my heart talks a lot. And when they told me what they had done because of what they interpreted of what I said, I was just flabbergasted. And I was delighted, of course. And I was reciprocated very nicely without even knowing that I was reciprocated. And it's a wonderful thing. Okay, I think we have bled that situation sufficiently. Let's go on to the other question we have here. And this is from, okay, reciprocation. Now, the other statement here, does fornication pull the inner self down? Now, what do you mean by fornication? By masturbation or by sexual experiences?
Sexual experiences.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you.
By
sexual experiences?
Yes.
Yeah, by sexual experiences. Okay, just so we have an idea of what road you're walking down. Let me say to you, according to history, according to the Bible, according to everything, there is no such thing as fornication. Fornication seems to indicate something that is done inharmoniously with the body. And when people have a sexual experience, generally speaking, it's not an unhappy situation. Now, over the years, and I mean thousands and thousands and thousands of years, mankind has had the sexual experience to maintain the race and to keep building up the race, to keep propagating more and more children, more and more people in the race, and that's good. However, there are always some people who feel they have to force another person to have a relationship with them. Now, these people are, that's the bad part, because no one should be forced to do anything that it's not their choice to do. And when there is sexual relationship, in a forced relationship, it should certainly be stopped immediately, because it is an improper thing. It is against all of it. Ask and ye shall receive, not take and you shall receive. You see, these things just don't work that way. Now, some animals have oestrus, and they have sexual experiences only at certain periods of time, certain seasons of the year, and so forth. Some animals are monogamous. They have sexual experiences only with one mate for life, like geese, and many other animals like that. But most animals are not monogamous. They have sex as much as they can. Now, the bees, the queen bee has a sexual relationship with at least 3,000 or 4,000 or maybe 100,000 other bees. And it keeps her alive to maintain her queendom. And she creates little bees, you know. She has little bees that are born, baby bees, and they grow. Now, this is their way of their attitude. Are you going to go in, or am I going to go in and say, now, naughty, naughty, you don't do things like that. That's improper. That is what they have worked out in their cultural moray in the bee community over millions of years, perhaps. And you go into many other cultures, many other things, and you go into early man. And early man went to other tribes, and he saw some beautiful girl there. And he, let's not say beautiful girl, he saw a woman, and he was ready to have a woman. And he didn't have a woman in his tribe that he could have. So he grabs this one by the hair and says, you're coming with me. Well, now maybe she was already taken by someone in her tribe that was her mate, someone who was her partner, and this person was taking her away. Now, that's part of their culture. Part of their culture is the marauding of other cultures, of taking women from other cultures. What is it when war is? And this is today. This is today. When warring nations fight against one another, they kill all the men and they keep the women and sometimes the children. But they kill the men. Why do they keep the women? They keep the women because the women are people with whom they can be mated with. And that's their culture. That's their way of doing it. Now, that's all pure fornication from the definition we have here. And because of that, it's perfectly okay. It's perfectly normal. Now, when you do something that you think is not normal, something you think is improper, something you think is wrong, then yes, it is wrong. But it's not wrong because it's wrong. It's wrong because you think it's wrong. And by you, I mean a community, an organization, a people who feel certain things are not proper. And that does not make it wrong or right. It just makes it what this community feels is right and wrong. Right and wrong in relationships, right and wrong in community activities is not anything coming out of the mind of God. It's not something coming out of the infinite allness. It is the infinite allness because everything comes out of that. What it is, it's something coming out of the community and what the community wants. Now, Jesus was pretty tough. The woman at the well who had relationships with all the men in town, and the women didn't like that, and so they told their men, you stone that woman or else you don't come to bed with me. And so the men went to get rid of the woman. And they told Jesus about her, that she was such a terrible woman. And Jesus said, well, let that one who is free of any sin himself cast the first stone. And Jesus was looking down, drawing in the sand. And when he looked up, all the guys were gone. All the guys were gone. Because all the guys had, in some way in their life, sinned against the community rules. Now, you are not stupid. You are not ignorant. You are not unaware. But what do the Arabs do with their wives? They have them wear veils, especially the Muslims. They have them wear veils. And as they have them wear veils, they cannot be without them. Now, that is terrible if they're without the veil. But now, certain things are taking place in those countries where the women complain and are getting out from behind their veil. Now, they're terrible for destroying their customs, for destroying their program. Maybe, maybe not. What will history have to say about that? What will time have to say about that? What does the now say about that to you? Is that wrong for them to have veils, or is it right? Their customs and the marriage customs of all the countries of the world are basically the same. They vary only in part of the dominance of one or the other. And in some cultures, the woman is the dominant one. I would say all cultures. But in some cultures, the woman is the dominant one. She controls the man, she controls the household, she controls the children, she controls everything. And so sometimes a change comes along, in which the woman is not let to be so dominant, and the man takes over the dominant role, saying, I'm the dominant one. Now, is he right in taking over the role that women have had for a period of time? Is he wrong? You see, the rules of society change, not necessarily by loving choice, but they change. And when they change, you either go along with them, or you fight what's happening. And most people go along with them. They just cooperate with them. Mandela was not one who cooperated. Now, the guys came to Jesus, and they said, she has been a bad lady. And Jesus said, okay, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. And then they were gone. And so he looked at the woman, and he says, neither do I have anything against you. Go and stop messing yourself up by the actions you're taking with the men of the community. Go get married. Go get married and have a relationship that the community would accept you in having, or if that's what you want to do. But Jesus did not judge her, and he did not judge anybody. Because what did he say? Judge not, lest ye be judged. For with whatever judgment you judge, so shall you be judged. And that's heavy duty stuff. Really heavy. Because we judge other people, other circumstances. We judge fornication. We judge marital relationships. We judge all sorts of things. And we say it is good, bad, and indifferent. And we have to, if we are Muslims, we have a faith that is based on the teachings of Jesus. It's based on the Hebrew background, but it comes with a new book, a new set of directions and goals, most of which are so pure and so wonderful until other people came along and rewrote them. And when the other people came along and rewrote them, they became horrendous. They became terrible. And that happens in everything. The Christian Bible was the most beautiful, pure, perfect expression of divinity that Jesus knew how to live. That was what he did. And then they translated into Greek, into Arabic, they translated into all the languages of the world, Latin and what have you. And in the translation, what happens? Stop and think about this. I'm hiring you to be my translator because you know the language. Now, you're a good man, but you're not honest. You're a good man, and so you do the translation. Well, sometimes you're a little tired or you're a little lazy, so you rush it along a little bit. You skip a few paragraphs, or you ad-lib a little bit. Or if you think what you're writing is not really what you believe, you change it. Now, nobody is going to be checking on you. There's not that many people around to check on translations. I give lectures in English, and I'm translated into different languages, and I understand the languages generally. And my translator is... and they're translating me, and they're saying something I'm not saying. And so I repeat my statement in another way, in another way. Sometimes I have say my statement 5 times before they will translate my statement and say what I want to say, you know? But to do that, you have to be awake. You have to be alert. I didn't know the language well, but I knew the connotation that was being done. Now, when translators translated the teachings of Jesus, they did their best. And the scribes, then they weren't really scribes, but they were translators. And they did the work, and they turned out so-so. And you know, in Aramaic writing and in Hebraic writing, they have a lot of dots on top and dots on bottom and things. And their language is very interesting, very difficult. So they wrote, and then people had to read it. But I want to tell you this story, which I think I've told you before, but it bears repeating here. Scholarship has been done on the early books of the Bible, including the Aramaic and the Hebrew and the Muslim Bibles. Scholarship has been done on them. And in the scholarship, this is what they revealed, but they never talk much about. Because if they were talking anything about it, you would say, you guys are crazy. Here's the fact. In the days when the Bible was first putting down on paper, it was being written down. But they did not have commas, periods, they did not have spaces between words. They only had a long run-on series of letters that you had to sort of more or less figure out where to stop and where to start again. And that went on for pages and pages and pages. Can you see what happened to the weary mind of you who is alert, very intelligent, and able to not be touched by that? Imagine those guys living in that time. Having to work on that stuff. And you know how old they were? They were about 10 and 12 years old, the ones who were doing the work. Now, how much of life had they lived at that point? And of the things that they were reading, how much could they tell what it was saying? Did they understand anything, or did they just take it letter for letter and put it down as it was given to them? And that's mostly what they did. But if you want to read about this, read about the type of script that was used by ancient writings of the Bible and so forth. It's very fascinating, very fascinating. And Muhammad was the same way. He had the same circumstance. How did he write? What did he write it in? What language did he write it in? Anybody know? Arabic. He didn't write in Greek. Oh, no way. He didn't write in Latin. It wasn't his way yet. He wrote in Arabic. And Arabic is a symbolic language which talks in symbols constantly. It's a symbolic language that talks about concepts, and then you have to put those concepts together to make the point. And this is why the story of Noah was the way it was. It was a bunch of symbolic ideas put together. So that you could come up with your own conclusion, come up with your own point of view. And it's rather fantastic, rather amazing. But that's the way it is. Okay, pretty interesting stuff, I think. All right, what are we answering all these questions here? Oh, yeah. Does fornication put pull the inner self down. The fornication that you're talking about is when you doubt yourself and you believe what you're doing is wrong, it pulls it down. If you believe what you're doing is right, and I don't mean taking advantage of somebody else, I mean living and believing what is beautiful and good, then that doesn't tear it down. If it did, the animal culture would have a tough time because they do what they do. And here he asks, religion condemns fornication and explain impurity. Religion does not condemn fornication. Religion condemns forcing other people against their will to participate in something in your life. And that could be stealing their money. That could be stealing their horse, their cow, stealing their property, stealing their wife, stealing their husband, stealing whatever you want, stealing their children. Most of the children in Bible times were stolen children. And they weren't stolen children so much as they were abandoned children who were picked up by people and brought into their culture, and then therefore they became part of that culture. And the people didn't go to get their children back that were abandoned because they abandoned them. They couldn't raise them. They didn't have money to take care of them. They didn't have the opportunity to feed, house, clothe, and train the child as they would like to. It was not a bad thing. It was just something of expedience. And that is what's bad, the expedience. Okay, if you'd like to know anything about anything, just ask me and I'll tell you. You didn't laugh. Okay, now you right here. Religion condemns fornication. Explain impurity. That's 2 points. Religion does not condemn fornication. Religion condemns all actions against another person's personal choice to participate or not participate. Religion condemns that. Religion does not, I think you said, explain impurity. There is no impurity. Impurity is in the mind of the observer. And if you observe something to be not harmonious with you, then you call it impure. If you observe anything which goes contrary to the community, contrary to law, contrary to the teachings of the church or the teachings of it, that you call impurity, and rightly so. But the church does not speak to that issue. The church, as the Old Testament says, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I mean, you're a snake and you made me lose my eyesight, I'm going to make you lose yours. Is that what it's all about? Man, what a horrendous way to live a life. You came and stole from me, so I'm going to steal from you. You killed my cows, I'm going to come over and kill your cows. That's not the way we do it. You killed my cows, I'm going to take you to court. And the judge is going to say whether you replaced my cows or whether you give me all of your cows. And if you haven't got enough cows to make it up, then you give me your wife and you give me your children and you give me all that you have. Now you say, who can do something like that? King Solomon. King Solomon took the child that both women said was theirs and he said, let's cut the child in half and you can each have half. And the real mother stood up and said, no, 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 never, never. Let the child live. And the king knew instantly who the real mother was. You see, we stand up for truth. We're like Mandela. We stand up even though we have to go to prison, even though we wouldn't have to be in prison. We stood up because we did not deny what we believed. We did not deny the political philosophy we had. We did not deny that the apartheid was not good for South Africa or any part of the world and should be removed. We did not deny that that's the case. And when you stand up for that, sometimes you're going to get your nose pinched. And it can happen to all of you. We could have our nose pinched right here today. The government could come in here and say you're teaching resurrection of something, you know. You're teaching anti-revolutionary type of things. You're teaching that we should honor our government and honor our legislators and honor our president. That's terrible. You should not teach that. And what are they saying? They are from the other party. And so they're trying to enforce their convictions upon us just because they're with the other party. And this is not unusual. I told you about Obama and the other party trying to put down his program because he was from the other party. Not because the program was bad or good, but because he was from the other party. We live a fantastic life in a fantastic world, doing fantastic things. But I am not here to talk to you about fornication. I'm not here to talk to you about what are the programs of your society, what are the rules of your handling your life and your government and all these things. I'm only here to say to you, you are fantastic. You can shine forth your charisma so wonderfully that you can demonstrate the goodness, the greatness, the wonder who you are right now. And you can do it without any conflict. Now, there are those who don't like that. They don't like that because that's too easy. But you know, of all things, that's not easy. That takes a great deal of self-confidence and conviction. And I believe you got it. I believe that you're wonderful. I believe that everything you do is good and very good. Okay, we've answered our questions pretty much. If you have any more questions, get them ready for after the next question part. We'll take a pause now, and after our pause, we'll come back, and we will do number 12 of our Who is in Charge of My Inner Genius? Wow, are we great? So come back on the hour, and let's have our lecture on that. Thank you for your love, your courtesy, your support, your standing by me with my voice up and down. And you can think your thought and say, Herb, your voice is always wonderful. Thank you. I love you. I love you.